Well, good morning. It's episode 40 of the Forever Bristol City podcast. And joining me, as usual, is the gang of three, Ian, Mark and Dave Fevs.
I just said to the chat just before we went live, it's December the 30th, 2017. It seems a long, long time ago, but that was the day that we played Wolves and we were right up their coattails, and then Frankie got himself sent off and we lost that game 2-1. And we've said this numerous times, but we haven't really progressed since that day. Guys, obviously we're going to talk about last night's game at Kenilworth Road, but am I being harsh by saying we haven't progressed and it's 3 years of it just trundling along? Yeah, Dave, you first.
Yeah, that was the high point. I think we've had some mini spells in the 3 years, and we've had some bad spells in the 3 years as well. And it's been typical Bristol City, kind of fairly like a roller coaster, and disappointing that we haven't kicked on.
Yeah, Ian, your thoughts on that? You know, 3 years. It's not the first time we've said it, but the last couple of results have put it into focus. I mean, we're going nowhere fast, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think when I look at things like, you know, we all got excited when we signed a young lad from Monaco, £4.5 million, adding up to 8.5, it said at the time, although Lee Johnson told me that wasn't correct. Not the 4.5 bit, the adding up bit. And to see how that lad has regressed. And Dave and I were discussing playing out of position last night. And to play him is extra left wing or left side of the three, narrow in midfield, or whatever position he was meant to be playing last night, shows me something is deeply troubling about Dean Holden, is that he doesn't seem to learn. So he'll make a mistake. Mm. Or something will go wrong, and then he'll repeat it 2 weeks later.
And let's come back on that.
But in terms of progress, no.
Progress over 3 years.
I got some stats to bear that out that we can discuss later on.
Come on to those in a minute. Let's come on to those in a minute, because the points you raised there about Dean not learning, I'm getting on my high horse today about the coaches in a minute. But Mark, your views. I mean, as Dave rightly said, we've had a few interesting games and what have you, but really 3 years ago today we lost at home to Wolves, and then we've just not progressed, have we? Not progressed at all.
Three years ago we were riding the crest of the League Cup run, which culminated in the games at Man City, which really, you know, been hit a problem and gave Lee Johnson a little bit of a little bit of credit for the following season or so. We were playing great football then, a tight-knit team that had injuries, nothing like we got now. But the last 3 years, as usual, City have oversold and under-delivered both corporately and on the pitch. Where we're left now, in the midst of the COVID pandemic, with about 11 injured players, nine long-term injuries, and the players that are out on the pitch just aren't good enough. We're down to having one shot on target per game. I've just looked at the results. We've only won three of the last 10 and taken 10 points. That is the team that we are, unfortunately. We're a team looking over our shoulders, not looking up unless there's a drastic change, either in personnel. I don't think getting rid of a coach is even a possibility. So we're going to struggle along at the moment, and we've got Saturday to look forward to.
There we go. Well, let's go back to last night's game at Kenilworth Road. I mean, it would have been the sort of place to go to come on the back of beating Wickham. Not convincingly, of course, but we'd have said, what a great Christmas, and we'd have been looking up. These are the fine margins in this division. But, Dave, if I can come to you on the starting lineup last night, I mean, playing Masengo wide left, that was just crazy. And were we playing 4-3-3? Yeah, what are your thoughts on that lineup?
We played 4-4-2. Same Saturday we played 4-4-2. There seemed to be a lot of confusion on the forum about who played up front Saturday. But no, and Holden even came out and said it was 4-4-2 on Saturday versus Wickham. It most definitely was last night. I was very surprised that he played Masengo there. If anything, I'd have played him and Semenyo the other way round. I'd have played Semenyo down a left and Masengo down a right and probably played him a little bit narrower as well. But I think, actually, off the ball, he did some really good stuff last night. Masengo didn't do much with on the ball, and he looked uncomfortable in that position. It was a bit of a surprise to play in there. But I think we are where we are with the players we've got, but I don't think that helped us in any way last night. I think the rest of the side fairly much picked itself, but
no, but not at all.
But I think, you know, I'd probably do things a bit differently, but I saw what he was trying to do apart from Masengo last night.
Yeah, let's get into the action. And we had a chance very early on where Masengo showed that sort of burst of speed from the middle, earned himself a free kick in a very good position. But Chris Martin, Ian, great position, 20 yards from goal. It summed up City, didn't it? It was sort of Rose Z of the very short stand. There is a Kenilworth Road there. That was a good opportunity early on, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, when we've been in positions like that, who's taken the last two of those free kicks and what happened? So the answer is Naki Wells. He's hit the post and brought a good save out of the goalkeeper where the ball almost went over the line. So we give it to Chris Martin. That's an example of not learning. Why do you do that?
No, that's 100% right there. Okay, I said, why do you do that? Yeah.
You know, if you've got a guy that can do what Wells has done from the free kicks, I mean, I think there's a pretty good argument for taking him off penalties, although he'll probably never, ever try that again. But, you know, leave him on the free kicks and at least you get a shot on target and the keeper might let it go through his hands or throw one in the net or whatever. But why all of a sudden Chris Martin's taking it and stood next to him is Tommy Rowe? I mean, Tommy can shoot, in fairness, but, you know, that's obviously some kind of training ground move, and that's just gone horribly wrong.
Yeah, we're talking about training ground. We're meant to have a guy, I think we'll talk about coaches in detail again later on, but we're supposed to have a guy called Pat Mountain. Well, not supposed to. He's one of the five, including Holden, on the bloody bench on the touchline matches. But 16 minutes, Mark. First goal, corner. Maybe it should have second corner. Maybe there was a foul on Bentley. Just leading up to it. But Callas missed his header. Nobody standing behind him other than Rhea, whatever his name was. And he was lurking unmarked. Volleyed in 1-0. I mean, we'd have the better of the early exchanges to a point, but a soppy goal, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah, we've been testing out the Lockyer at left back and profiting from that, and Hunt was putting some crosses, but Harry Cornick was testing us with crosses from the right, and I think Viner had to put two over the bar. But we just we defended the first corner, and Ray was at the on the other post where Callas deflected it wide after you said Bentley may have been fouled when he tipped it back. Thinking that keepers get overprotected, I don't think it was a foul on him. He just pushed it behind him, and Ray struck, and Callas defended well at near post. But Callas got under the ball, but all the rest of the players got sucked to the near post. Masengo was stood next to a guy, not really marking him, and Ray just stole in and volleyed it first time. It was a great finish, but where was the marking? And it just keeps happening. It happened against QPR. It happened against Barnsley. I think it happened recently in a game as well. We just don't learn. And if we got specialist set pieces, coach, can they get fined or have their wages withheld? Because they're not earning their money at the moment. That's awful.
Well, don't worry like that.
And from a position where we had tested them and nothing happened. Here we are again, chasing the game.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting...
Dave, the goal, it was sloppy, wasn't it? Yeah, because, as Mark just said, Ray was standing unmarked. There was nobody behind Callas, so, you know, who was guarding that far side of the box? But sloppy goal, wasn't it?
It is, and I think, you know, this is what you've got to review and look at how you're defending them. I think whether it's Chris Martin or Fabara Jiju doing the near post, I think we've done that pretty successfully all season. So, you know, bearing in mind, everyone said, oh, my God, we're going to be in real trouble if Pham's not playing. Well, Pham started four games this season, and Chris Martin's done the near post job pretty well. I don't think we've conceded a near post goal all season. So I think that, you know, from that point of view, we've been successful. I think Bentley, in terms of predominantly coming off his line and punching or catching, has been pretty good. So I think we've done that pretty well. But what we've not done very well is pick up our runners. And Harry and myself were having a bit of debate about this last night on the forum. And I think, you know, the instant reaction was, what's bloody Kallas doing? You know, he's left his man again. But I think I took four steals last night of that corner. And what you'll find is that we've got four players marking their four players. But actually, because it's so congested, it's really easy to just block runners off, peel someone from the front of the group of four, round the back, which is what Ray did. So he wasn't left unmarked. He actually just peeled around the back as they all moved off in different directions. And if you actually line them up one for one or man for man against each other, then you actually see that Ray was Zach Viner's man. But then Viner's then trapped the wrong man, and then Kallas has been left with two. And that's the kind of thing that happens. And we were debating last night where actually everyone moans about zonal defence. But in that kind of setup where they condense four players really close together and then they're all going to make different runs, you can't man mark because they'll block you off. Someone will spin round the back and you can't get there. So you have to think about it differently. And that's, you know, that's the learning that we now need to see taken into future games, because actually we've been blocked off quite a lot recently. And I think people have worked out that we'll mark man-to-man and have decided, well, we'll just stick four blokes close together and we'll scatter our runs and we'll do them that way. And if we get the ball in the right spot, we've got a good chance. And that's exactly what's happening. So we'll see what happens from this point onwards. But it wasn't Kallas's man, but I think as a defensive unit, marking
that. And if he'd have just got a summit on the header, it was defensive, not good.
Yeah, it's break.
And if he'd have got summit on the header, it probably would have sailed over the top and got away. Ian, I mean, we go a goal down, but go on.
Well, Kallas has done one thing wrong in the fact he's got attracted to and then got sucked under the ball. So he's jumped, the ball went, what, a foot over his head? He was never going to make that header. So he's not got great awareness. Somebody's just said on air, why is there no one on the back post? Well, years ago, and it was normally the fullbacks, one would go on each post. And the number of times you saw those guys clear the ball off the line was unbelievable. For some reason, we've stopped doing it. Now, it may be that we have to go back to doing that, because it's a corner. You're not going to, you know, there's no chance you're going to catch people offside or very little, unless the ball comes out and you all run out and the ball comes straight back in again. But I thought it's this thing about not learning. And why have you got the goalkeeping coach, or one of the two goalkeeping coaches, on defensive set pieces or attacking set pieces? I'm not quite sure. There's way too many. I really don't get this. I mean, years ago, you probably had the manager and the assistant and the physio on the bench. There seems to be an absolute army of these people.
Well,
now,
let's come on to that later, Ian, because, you know, that's something that I want to focus on there, is because we've got too many average people coaching this side and not enough good ones. I mean, looking at the balance of the first half, we had Naki Wells, again ineffectual from him, setting up Semenyo, who I thought didn't do too bad. Good shot saved by Sluger, who's not a great goalkeeper by all accounts, and then just on the half hour, Hunt crossed the ball in and Martin's header hit the bar. I mean, Mark, Wells and Martin up front, it's so pedestrian, isn't it? Yeah, and, you know, those two chances, they weren't real chances. They were just the only other attempts I've got on goal from us in that opening 45. What did you think?
Yeah, I think from about the 25th minute onwards, we looked good for about 10 minutes, and we were getting crosses from both sides. I think Semenyo went down, tried to get a penalty, but it would have been soft. And then Semenyo had that shot from the right, when possibly it'd be better to hit it hard across the box because Martin and Wells are following in. But no, I think that it's the movement is quite pedestrian, and we're getting into good positions. I mean, we got behind the defence a few times last night, but nothing's come of it. I mean, there were in the second half, there was Masengo failed to get on the end of a ball, and similarly in the first half, there's just not having any shots on goal. And when we do, there's hardly any on target. That's the problem. It's the quality in that final third.
Yeah, well, you said, I think I was going to comment on that point, when Nash burst into the box and put a good cross in, and Masengo coming in on the left, he just overran the ball. But that had come a couple of moments. We're into the second half now, after a right-wing cross came in, and James Collins, unmarked on the D, just inside the D. And that was after a loose pass from Backinson, who I've written down. A number of times he lost possession. We used to give Casey Palmer grief for doing that. But that was a save from Bentley, Dave, wasn't it? That was, you know, you cut him some slack for maybe not dealing with the second goal when it came. But your thoughts, Dave, on Bentley's save? But
yeah, it was a really good.
The sloppiness that led up to it.
And that happened all over the pitch. The number of square balls our two central midfielders played that didn't get to their man was astonishing. Really, it was just, you know, it caused us so many problems. When sometimes we secured quite decent possession and you thought, well, that's okay, we're moving it, and then we just give away a silly pass, and they punished us last night for it. And you know, fair play to Zach Viner. I think he put enough pressure on Collins to make him kind of snatch it a little bit, but Bentley stood up and made a really, really good save. And you thought at that point, you know, especially when we then went and scored a few minutes later, you thought that's probably the thing that's kind of turned this game.
Maybe we might get something.
Just sloppy. And I think, you know,
and I know it was an own goal. Yeah. I know our goal was an own goal, Dave, but what a great pass that was by Semenyo. You know, it literally setting up Wells, and you know, their bloke, well, he had to knock it in, but that was a good pass by Semenyo, wasn't it?
Probably our brightest player last night. Still too many bits he doesn't do well, but you know, against a fairly low bar, you know, I think he was my only one that scraped above a six last night. You know, far too many fives in the team last night. But Semenyo, I think, was our brightest player.
He was. No, Ian, I mean, the second goal, again, calamity. Callas, I watched it a couple of times on replay. Callas sort of scuffed his clearance, Backinson weak pass out, and then Dewsbury Hall, as they say, sounds like a stately home or something like that, 20 yards out. René Gilmartin was trying to give the excuse, as goalkeepers do, oh, well, he lost his footing. But, you know, should Benson stop that one, or was it, you know, was it a decent shot created by mistimed clearances? Ian, your thoughts on what proved to be the winning goal?
Well, that was Dewsbury Hall's first ever goal for Luton, so he's not Mr. Prolific. I was annoyed Callas's was a scuff, but that didn't actually get us into trouble. It was Backinson trying to pass through somebody, and as Dave alluded to earlier on, Backinson and Nash aren't going to perform in a two-man midfield in the Championship. Forget it. It's not going to happen. They need a third player in there with them. But you've got to play a formation that allows that. And they can all do the same job, and they all want to. So essentially, they all want to be, if you like, the most defensive of the three midfield players. So you've got essentially three players who want to play holding midfield. I would argue that probably none of them can, and they can't do it well. But with Backinson, he's a young lad, and for every good thing that he does, and he does some really good things, a little bit like Dave was saying about Semenyo, he does some really bad things. Nige did it as well. Square balls that were too long, too hopeful, not struck well enough, and got picked off and opened us up. You know, coming back to the, I know we'll get onto the manager later on, But, you know, I wrote down a lot of things last night before the game. So I wrote down poor passing, gifting the ball to the opposition, stroke sloppy, wasteful in possession, lacking tempo in attack and physical weakness all over the field, but particularly in midfield. Now, I wrote that down 20 minutes before we started. So if I can see it, and these championship clubs have got analysts all over us, they can see it as well. And this comes back to, once again, I'll keep saying it, he's not learning.
Well, we come on to Holden in a second. Let's quickly go through the marks. I'll do mine first, then I'll come to you, Mark. I mean, I gave Bent a 5. Maybe that could have been a 6. Across the back, 4. Hunt, 6. Viner, 6. Kallas, 5. Rowe, 5. In the middle, Nash, 6. Backinson and Masengo, 4 each. Up front, Semenyo, 6. Martin, 5. And Wells, 5. Your thoughts, Mark, on those marks, higher or lower in general?
I'm not going to argue with any of those. It's just completely frustrated by the whole thing. And yeah, I don't think Mark's a very, very high in my estimation. I think I'd go with that. I don't really want to mark any of the players because it just thinking of that game, it fills me with dread, really. So no, I wouldn't argue with any of them at all. Well, I would just go back to the end of the game, David. I think the one thing we missed was we had one chance at the end, really, where Backinson had shot blocks. It went out to Semenyo and he hit the ball hard across the box and Wells didn't get to it. The game really ended once Hunt had to go off. I'd imagine perhaps his day was done. But as soon as Mariappa went on, we had nothing down the right and the game just fizzled out. That was it. After Hunt went off, we just couldn't create anything.
Yeah. That's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not dwell on the marks, actually, because, you know, it's a bit academic because there's the bigger issues to talk about. And Dave, if I come to you next, Holden's interview on Radio Bristol afterwards, I mean, there's a long thread on here, and the general view is that, you know, he thought we were the better team. Yeah, I mean, come on, you know, he's running. He was seen as Mr. Honest to begin with, but it's wearing a bit thin now, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I think there's probably some...
Hello, Dave?
Yeah, do you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some, protectionism going on in terms of trying to keep the players, you know, from being thrown under the bus. I doubt he really thought we were the best team last night. I think you got to understand he's not going to come out and necessarily be totally honest after a performance like that. There were some good bits, but yeah, no, I think he's just showing up a public face there rather than probably what he said in the change room.
It must be hurtful for him, Dave, or any manager, when you've got, and this was a couple of weeks ago, Gary Rowett saying we're the easiest tactical challenge he has had. I mean, do you think that's harsh for a fellow manager to say that? Or maybe sour grapes that maybe he was interviewed for the job at some point and he's bitter.
It's a cheap shot, but so what? You know, if anything, I'd have had that pinned up in the dressing room and be using that as my motivation for the next game for my own players. So, you know, I think you take it both ways, really. I think, you know, if we're worried about what opposition managers are saying and letting it affect us, then we've got bigger problems.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, I said, let's get on to the coaches now. We don't see too many images of the coaches on the bench, but everyone that I saw last night showed me that Holden was stood there, hand on his chin, looking very thoughtful. Keith Downing was sat there like a little old man in the front row of the stand, just offering nothing. I did see Simpson chatting a few times. We've got Pat Mountain there and Cisse, yeah? You know, and if you look at the players, I never heard of Pat Mountain before. You might tell me that he's got some credibility somewhere in his career. But you've got Downing, Simpson, Cisse, all played at a reasonable level. Poor old Dean Holden spent most of his time in the lower leagues. You know, as you said, Ian, there's 5 blokes on the bench, yeah? And at one stage, when Dean was opening his mouth, you could see Simpson shouting as well, what the hell is going on? Yeah, this is what's doing my head in at the moment. I'm just, you know,
he's not being supported by decent coaches because they don't seem to be adding anything, do they, Ian?
Well, you know, with respect, Dave, you don't know that. I don't know that. You don't know what's going on down there on a daily or weekly basis. I hate it, by the way, and this is if the Robins TV or the guy that films it is watching. I know it's a syndicated thing, but please, 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 please show us the game. When we've got the ball, we're attacking. I don't want to see a picture of Dean Oldham scratching his backside or wandering around in the technical area staring at the floor. That does nothing for me.
So please come and watch it, isn't it, Ian? It's not our own cameras.
No, Sky do it as well. Please, can we watch the game? I know what Dean Oldham looks like. I don't need to see a picture of him wandering around the technical area. Now I've got that off my chest. My view is you have to take the injuries into account. I don't know how the coaching's broken down into who does what. Players will always tell you the same thing when new coaches come in. They'll always tell you the training's great. It's different classes, the word they use. And I've heard that expression for every manager that's ever joined. Oh, Ian, mate, the training's different class. It's different class. 6 months later, the bloke's gone. So we've got to look at it. It's all about one thing, and that's results. And my view is, even though we've got – I put a team on Twitter last night saying, look, this is what we could actually pick if everyone was fit, and it was vastly superior to what we had last night. Now, we can't do that, so we just have to do much better with what we've got. And my fear is we are not doing that. My big fear when Dean Oldham got the job was it was continuity Lee. And for me, I can't see anything that's changed at all.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point there. I mean, Mark, your thoughts on the coaching setup? You know, because you've got people on here listening and commenting on the message here. With Bearboy79 has put a couple of comments in there, and yeah, are they mentally weak? Is there a leader on the pitch? Callas is probably the strongest individual, but you know, even he's not vocal like we've seen some City I'll call them warriors in days gone by, you know, and we can probably rattle off a few names if we chose to do. But what is there's something fundamentally wrong? And I say, if we hadn't had that sprint start to the season with those four wins, it's now 21 points in the last 18 games, right? That's relegation form. But you know, is it the coaching? Is Dean out of his depth, Mark?
Well, going back to the setup, I think Keith Downing's the analysis man. We've often seen him in the stands at Ashton Gate making notes, you know, sort of rugby union style. And I imagine perhaps he's mic'd up down to the touchline. So Simpson's more in the technical area. Although I don't know if you've ever seen him running about, and obviously Dean's out there on the side of the pitch. But you think with three heads should be better than one, really. And I think they may have been brought in by Ashton. I think Ashton must have a relationship somewhere with Keith Downing through West Brom. He was there a number of years. I think some people discovered a tenuous link to Paul Simpson as well.
It's not a tenuous link. He was Dean Oldham's manager at Shrewsbury. So without doubt, Paul Simpson's there because of Dean Oldham.
Because of Dean Oldham. My apologies. I thought it might be Mark Ashton.
Keith Downing, you probably need to say, now, was that then off the back of something Mark Ashton, you know, within the FA, or is it actually?
Yeah.
Paul Simpson said, well, if you're taking me for the England set, I mean, Keith Downing's available as well. We don't know that, but certainly Dean Holden, boss at Shrewsbury, and it was Dean Holden that called him and asked him to get back in. And at least he's actually said that.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know that.
That's okay. No, just,
going back.
Mark, I just started correcting.
No, that's fair enough. Well, those are the facts. Can't argue with facts. I mean, going back to what you said, David, I think we're mentally weak. This had been a problem for seasons. We just don't have. I mean, we look at our fouls count. Probably about four or five last night. Lots of other teams do tactical fouls. I think there was another one in the middle when a player went through the back of Semenya. We don't do that. We're just too nice all round. There's no aggressive streak there. Everybody seems very, very comfortable. At the moment, you could say the excuse
is... When we do that, there's going to be something point you make too nice. Yeah. When you say we're too nice, when you say we're too nice, we do stupid niggly little fouls, don't we? Yeah, that are just going to piss off the referee. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, from that perspective. Yeah, rather than full-blooded tackles. Is that the point you're getting at there, really? Yeah.
Yeah, well, but we're nowhere near a dirty team, and I don't think we get in players' faces enough. We're not a pressing team. We're not a direct team. We're not a passing team. Like you said to me out of the podcast, that we've got no identity really. At the moment it's a complete and utter mess, and with four players at the end of that game, we just, you know, tried to throw the kitchen sink at it. But when Zizou came on, there were no crosses into the box. The guy hardly had a touch. It was a complete and utter waste of time. And at the moment, it just seems to be a real mess. There just seems to be no plan A or plan B. We just don't know what we're doing. And we're going away from home, whereas we seem to have some structure with 3-5-2 up to a point. We go a goal behind and we're constantly chasing the game, and then we're making these silly mistakes, casual mistakes from the likes of Backinson, Naj to an extent, and we're easily picked off by sides now that just know that Bristol City are a nice, soft touch who can be quite easily beaten, while playing to a certain tactic, given the ball, and they'll make a mess of it.
Go on, Dave.
No, go on. I was going to come to you. You carry on what you're about to say there. Go on. Yeah.
I think there's a big difference. If you were a Bristol City player receiving the ball against most Championship sides, you're probably thinking, right, if I don't take a good touch, I'm either going to lose the ball or I'm going to get clattered. I don't think opposition players feel the same against Bristol City. They might get a little, you know, shove from, you know, a Calum O'Dowder or from Naj or something like that, and give away a soft free kick, which probably wasn't necessary in the first place. But we don't ever hurt anyone in a tackle, or very, very occasionally we might do. Most of the time it's soft, as Mark's just basically told us, that we're not a hard team, and that doesn't mean you have to be dirty. You just have to be committed, and I don't think we're committed in the tackle. There's too many dangled legs. You know, Backinson's early tackle that he got fouled on was because he dangled his leg in. You know, that's why he got a bit hurt.
Yeah, that's right. That's the first one. It was a half-hearted attempt, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's basic technique, and that's not being committed to the cause. You know, I got a bloody hole in my shin because I went in to, you know, block tackle someone knowing he's gone over the top of the ball. You know, with City, they'd have dangled a leg in. And, you know, that's what's missing out there. There's a big lack of commitment, not just in tackles, but to make angles, to be brave to receive the ball, to just do the hard yards to make it easier for your teammate. And that's the big issue out there. One of the issues out there.
Well, and that's the issue because Dino to the players, yeah, all happy with him because he's missed a soft touch. I mean, if you look at the two people that are his principal assistants, there's nobody there who's the good cop, bad cop, which is the strength of any managerial setup. I mean, Ian, we're getting to the stage now, really, whereas we need to have standing up behind the lectern either Mark Ashton or Junior Lansdowne saying, look, this is a season like no other, right? We have been hit by injuries. We are not going to spend in the transfer window. Yeah, this season is a write-off. We're really sorry that our players that we signed in the, you know, the Williams and the Walsh, when he was here before, you know, they're not going to be fit. Let's write this season off, and, you know, we're going to aim to get 55. We're not going to get relegated, but, you know, this is a statement that this is a consolidation season, which I was saying 2 months ago. You know, Holden's got a free hit,
and somebody above him, because at the moment he's the one who's taking all the penalties, somebody above him should come and speak out, because they're fast enough in doing that, Mr. Ashton, when things are going well. But give the man some support and say what we're going to do. And Ian, you know, what should we do? The transfer window's just around the corner. You know, it looks like Williams ain't going to play this season, period. Yeah?
Is there a question in here anywhere?
So from the club now, and they've not got a great record in terms of communicating with them. No, I'm just having a rant. I'm having a rant, to be fair.
Yeah, right? Well, calm down. I'll answer your question. Look, this season isn't a free hit from where we are. We've got a great chance of making the playoffs if is the world's biggest word, we play well. And I think the problem with the fans at the moment, in my humble opinion, and from what I read and what I hear, isn't the fact that we're winning a game, losing a game, and losing more than we're winning. It's how we're playing. It's the same thing as the Leeds fans a few weeks ago and the Newcastle fans. They were in more or less exactly the same place. The Newcastle fans are completely up in arms because of the way that the team's playing. And the Leeds fans are all rallying round Bielsa saying, yeah, but look how well we're playing. We've just had a bit of bad luck. Now, that's the difference. The chance of John Lansdowne or Mark Ashton standing up and saying anything like you've said, you've got more chance of seeing a polar bear walk past your front garden when you next look out the window. So just forget it. That's not going to happen. They're not going to say, well, we're going to write this season off, because that would be a terrible thing to say, and they get pelters for that. And they're both keeping their heads down, because the coach always takes the fall, and they will not get rid of him quickly, because at that point they'd have to put their hands up and say, got it wrong again, Dad. And they're not going to do that. So forget that. That's not going to happen. Our only chance is if we can be, to use that well-worn phrase, there or thereabouts when the injured players come back, and it won't be in January, it'll be in February at the earliest for all of them, and three of them, De Silva, Williams, and Weinman, are out for the season. So you ain't going to see them this year. So coming back to your other point, the transfer window, yeah, we need to recall Palmer and recall Cam Pring, and we need to sign three players, assuming no one leaves. We need to sign three players. A left-sided centre-back, a holding midfield player, a sort of guy that looks like he just murdered his parents and you wouldn't want to go anywhere near it. And the other guy is a creative midfielder. So if you want names, I can't think of a holding player like that, although they're about. I would say Bannon is your creative guy in midfield, if you can get him, and he's out of contract in June, and Sheffield Wednesday are in a mess. And Phillips at Liverpool, if we can get a centre-back out of Liverpool, and that'll only be if they sign one or two themselves, so we don't have to wait. But that's what we need. And with effectively getting five players back in, we'd be able to freshen up the squad. We'd have a wider range of formations, and you never know your luck. O'Dowda might not have got a bad hamstring injury, and he might be back to be able to play left wing. But I still don't think tactically Dean Oldner or any of the guys have got it. And that's my honest opinion. And in terms of players, we haven't got championship midfielders week in, week out. We've got blokes that are 5-6 out of 10 players. They're all right. But that's as far as it goes. That's my opinion.
Would you concur with that, Mark, that, you know, he needs to go out and strengthen? I believe that when I see it, because we have a habit of getting players in on loan that aren't any better than what we've got. And Casey Palmer coming back, you know, he went out for a reason because he wasn't that great. But what do you see happening in the transfer window?
I think, the problem is with expenditure going through the roof with no income, Unless we sell players, which ain't going to happen, because the only assets we got are probably Dan Bentley and Famara coming to the end of his contract. There won't be any money coming in. So, yeah, bring Pring back, doing what it's Portsmouth. As left-back, need an aggressive central midfield player, definitely, because there needs to be nobody in the club who can put his foot through the ball. But I think we also need another striker. Impossible though it may sound, because Zizou is managing an injury. We don't know how bad his groin injury is, but he couldn't start the game last night. He couldn't start the game against Wickham. So we just, I mean, playing Wells and Martin every week. Why did Sam Bell only get 3 minutes? That was a complete waste of time. At least give the lad 10-15 minutes. He couldn't have done any worse than Wells towards the end of the game.
Apparently,
we're really struggling for players, aren't we?
No, I mean, Dave, signing us to
cramp,
right. Yeah. There you go again, you see, these facts, you know. You can't fight facts, can you?
That's the latest injury. You've got to have, if you have anything, it's your quad.
What Holden said, he was cramping up. And it was,
yeah,
I saw someone on Twitter say it was a tight quad, but Holden said he was cramping up, so I took him off.
But we're struggling. I mean, we're really struggling for players. We're almost putting the same team out every week out of necessity. And really, I think, you know, in an ideal world, Martin could have a rest and we could put Zizou in. But we just don't know the extent of Zizou's groin injury. Is he just holding on for dear life until he needs an operation? I think we need to bring another player in. But is that impossible? What do you think?
Is anybody going to come in for Zizou when he's got this groin problem? You know, nobody's going to buy him if he can only manage 30 minutes now. So he's going to go for nothing in the summer.
Yeah, amongst 14 million
pounds. That's probably what he's angling for anyway. Players. I mean, he's probably a decent bloke, but he's agent.
Dave, we've got 14 million pounds worth of players. That's what we paid for them, out of contract and leaving for nothing in June. And I'd like, when you're talking about get John Lansdowne and Mark Ashnutt for an explanation, boy, would I like an explanation of that. Because if I did that in any job I've ever had, I'd have found myself in jail, never mind sacked. You can't buy players for 14 million quid and then just let them go for nothing, or perhaps you can, but if that's what we're doing, I'd really like to have it explained as to why we're doing it.
I think you're right, Ian. I think, you know, there's a simple answer which says we're waiting to see we hung on recontracts because we didn't know what was happening with COVID. There's probably a slightly less sane answer that says, oh, we're hanging on because if we get promoted, then we'll be looking at a different pot of players, which I don't think is the way to plan. And I think there's another one which says, we haven't really got a clue what our recruitment strategy is. And you're right, we're in danger of throwing money away. I don't see the continuity and the succession planning in there. And I haven't done for a good couple of years in terms of what we're trying to do. I look at the summer and I think if our policy is to buy young players that we can develop with the odd experienced player in there to, you know, fill a perhaps a more short term, you know, over a season or two, absolutely fine. And to some extent you might say, well, Joe Williams was the start of that. Let's not talk about injuries at this point. You know, I think we all saw the sense of that. And I think there's a point that says we should be perhaps trying to pillage those types of players from the less affluent clubs in our division. So almost a bit of a repeat of what Steve Cottrell did back in summer of 2014, where he said, right, I'm going to go and get the best young... He didn't get the best players in the division. He got the best young players from the clubs he knew he could go and bully. So, he took Luke Freeman from Stevenage, who couldn't hang on to him. Basically, Freeman was going to go on a free. Stevenage were going to get compensation for him. And they said, well, offer him a contract and then we'll buy him off you. And that's kind of what happened. And we got him for a snip in reality. We picked up Martin Little on a free track. So we picked up Luke Ayling from a relegated Yeovil because we knew we could bully them in terms of signing. That's what we did, and that's what we should be doing to, you know, your Barnsleys, your Coventrys, all those types of sides. Then we're just going to pinch your best young
and players. Dave, who was leading? Who was leading those
times? Yeah, Barnsley's wages are rock bottom. We'd have no problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave, who was leading those transfer negotiations, though, in the summer of 2014? Because, you know, that was, you know, Cottrell, I know it was a lower level, but he
Steve
came
Cottrell,
in.
Steve Cottrell and Keith Burt. There you go.
Keith Burt. So they did that. None of the fancy Mark Ashton, who sort of appeared on the scene 6 months later, I think. And it's interesting, somebody...
I'll tell you the sequence on this. Go on. Mark Ashton came in as a consultant under Sean O'Driscoll, under his tenure, and they tried to implement a scouting database and process and system. And when Steve Cottrell came in, him and Keith Burks threw it in the bin and said, we prefer to use our eyes to scout people, and then we'll have our people that we trust out there in the scouting network to be our eyes as well. And that's how they worked. Then...
Yeah.
Obviously, successful season. Didn't go well the next season, as we know. And Mark Ashton then allegedly came back in. He left his job in Oxford and he came in behind the scenes before he was officially appointed. And I think it's fair to say he was brought in to get rid of Steve Cottrell. And I expect Steve Cottrell knew that as soon as Mark Ashton come in, having thrown out all of his stuff when he first arrived, Mark Ashton coming back, it was probably like the Grim Reaper coming back in, and Cottrell knew his cards were marked and knew he was on his way. And I think that's when you start to see even more tantrums coming out from Cotts. And, you know, don't be fooled by Ashton of being appointed in January. He was in behind the scenes in December when he left Oxford.
He was on the scene before then.
Yeah. So that's kind of what happened. So yeah. I think there's a big problem with recruitment.
Ashton's got his own favourite agency as well, hasn't he? Because he likes dealing with this outfit called Wasserman, who are apparently the agents for Walsh and Williams.
Supposedly, that's only
two players, so that's a bit of a...
You can't
bottom that out, can you? I mean, if there was 10 players down there from, Ian, I'd say so, but...
Ian, I don't think you can say that. That's not fair. Wasserman are a massive agency, and actually Wasserman bought up the agency that Lee Johnson and Callum O'Dowda and several other players were part of. So they're just a big agency. I don't know how many players they've got on their books, but across multiple subsidiaries, they probably cover a lot of City players. And players do move around with agents. That's the way that business works. I wouldn't sit here today and say Mark Ashton only uses players from Wasserman. I think you're on dodgy ground saying things like that.
Yeah.
But I would say that our recruitment is flawed, and we've made some fantastic money by selling players in an inflationary market. And I don't think we've got full value for the players that we brought back in with that money. I think we've wasted a load of that money. And I think that's because we haven't looked critically at how we should do recruitment. And I think there's too much based on data and not enough with eyes. I don't believe that Lee Johnson didn't get a say on players. I think if that's the case, then I think you call Steve Lansdowne and Mark Ashton's bluff and say, I refuse to work under those conditions if I'm not allowed to choose the players that you want me to put into my first team squad. That's my quite strong opinion on all of that stuff.
Lee Johnson told me that he had final say on incoming.
Yeah.
And he told me to my face. And Mark Ashton, in a completely different conversation, told me the same thing.
I agree. I think if Lee Johnson didn't get final say on incomings, then he might as well. If he really backs himself as a manager, it's an argument I've had on OTIP a number of times. If you back yourself as a manager, which I'm sure Lee Johnson did, his ego's big enough, you'd basically say, right, it's me or him. And you'd back yourself that if Lansdowne backs Mark Ashton, that you'd go and find yourself a job somewhere else if you think you're that good. So I actually think it's very convenient that the bad players are the players that Lee Johnson didn't want, and the good players are the players that Lee Johnson want. I don't buy it. I really don't.
Can I ask a question? I think you're right. And the issue that you've got there with recruitment, you've got the issue of budget. So I'm sure Mark Ashton, Dean Oldham would love us to go and get Lionel Messi, but it's never going to happen. And I think our only alternative at the moment with the injuries we've got is to play, is to blood some not all of them, of the younger players. Like, we need a, if we play a three, we need a left-sided centre-back. Taylor, that's where he plays. Now, Gary Owers made a point on Radio Bristol last night where he said, trouble is with these lads is they're not playing any football. They're not playing under 23 games because they're in the first team bubble. So he said, you have to be careful. But on Saturday against Brentford, start, you know, if you want to put Chris Martin, give Sam Bell a debut and Riley Towner. Play a 3-5-2 or even, yes, play a 3-5-2. And if it's not working for Sam Bell after half an hour, you've got five substitutes, take the kid off.
Yeah.
Where's the problem?
No, you make a good point. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ian. You're not going to know until you
play these questions.
Yeah, let me just finish. That's one of the threads on the OTIB is if we were playing the youngsters and we were losing, now if we were losing 3 or 4-0 playing youngsters, people would be kicking off. But we'd much sooner see Riley Towler come in, play in his best position, or even a Cameron Pring, if he comes back, play at left back, but play with a bit of spirit and a bit of, you know, aggression. And I think the fans would be happy, Mark.
Yeah, I think they would, and we've got no choice but to play some of the youngsters. I just want to go back very quickly, this debate about data. Now, doesn't Matthew Benham at Brentford, they didn't have those millions that they got for Benrahma and Maupay, you know, a few years ago. But don't they use data, you know, are you predominantly in their transfer dealings as well to purchase players? How does that differ, you two, you know, compared to our own recruitment policy?
I can tell you that the Brentford's guy in Europe, where they've got some of their players, is a retired school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he is the one responsible for the Benrahmas of this world. We were offered the lad that went to Villa, what's it? Is that Cox?
Watkins.
What's the name of the guy?
Ollie Watkins.
We were offered him by Paul Tisdale. We said, no, thanks. So that was Ollie Watkins. He went straight past the front door from Exeter straight out to Brentford. Now, this is what I'm talking about.
With Watkins. You know, carry on, then I'll have my chip in.
Yeah. And one great thing, for example, this season, we've brought in more money than we've spent out. And one of the players we sold was a player who had 16 assists last season. That was Nikolajsson. And God knows how many chances he actually created, because those are just assists that were turned into goals. So we didn't replace him. He went. He wanted to go because he wasn't playing regular football. So that's something else we've missed. Now, the next highest assist guy was Jack Hunt, who put in the only decent cross, the only productive cross of the game last night. There were some other crosses that just flashed across the penalty area. No one was in the box to get on the end of them. But 1 minute you're playing, to play 4-4-2 with Masengo on the left wing as such, I just don't know, I just cannot imagine the thinking that leads to that. And a great man once said, you never solve a problem with the thinking that created it, and there's still too much of the thinking that created the problem left down at Ashton Gate. And if you look at all the stats, we are no more than bang average, and we're not getting better.
Or you do what you've always done, you get what you've always got, I suppose, is something similar, isn't it?
So what was going to change?
Dave, you were going to talk about Watkins and the saga of how we missed him.
I think, you know, in terms of him being heavily scouted by Bristol City, when it came to making a bid for him, I think actually Tisdale sold him the dream of Brentford, not Bristol City, and actually set up lots of things for him up in London to make it a bit, because actually, he thought from an extra point of view, I think Ollie Watkins will succeed there and actually we'll take a slightly lower fee than what Bristol City are offering because we'll have a bigger sell on. And that's what I've heard around Watkins. In terms of Brentford's recruitment, you know, they've also got a B team model where they bring people in. They've got a massive link with, however you pronounce it, Midtjylland in Denmark, because that's where Anker's Rasmussen, they're one of their kind of CEOs who's massively data focused, is based. And they use a combination of good scouting and good data to do it, but they don't rely totally on data.
Sure.
A lot of it's done with the eyes, and then they'll run it through data as well. And I think I couldn't honestly tell you how our recruitment works. We've heard stories of how it works. We've heard there's a database, but there's more to a database than just going in Football Manager and saying, I want a left winger with pace 15 plus, etc. It don't work like that. But I think our critical ability to look at a player and find out whether they, one, if they're any good, two, would they be good enough to play in the Championship in Bristol City's system, is another kettle of fish, because what is our system? And I'm probably going back more into the Lee Johnson era here, because we never played the same system. You know, and we can talk about Eliasson. Eliasson didn't fit the system we played. Individually, did some great things last season, but our results of him in the team weren't any better than with him out of the team. And that's where we've got mixed up recruitment.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a mess. And going back to Eliasson, I mean, he's not exactly pulling up trees. Over in
the side,
wherever it is he's playing now, as somebody commented on his Ream, results, and he's been in and out. No, he can't get in the side at the moment. Ream, that's it. Guys, look, let's look forward to the next game, because we're just coming up for the hour. And what a next game it is to have. I mean,
sure, we can.
But, I mean, Brentford are everything we are capable of being, yeah, but we do seem light years away. They do everything better than us. Now we're probably going to win 1-0 with a goal from bloody whoever at the weekend. I wish. But not a great game to start the new year with, Mark, is it? That's the last place you want to go, to that horrible new ground of theirs with those multicoloured seats that look ghastly. But Brentford, you know, 3-goal-plus home win, would you say, Mark?
It looks like that on paper, and they're unbeaten in 15. I mean, it doesn't bear thinking about. They've got an identity. I think they play 4-3-3 with rotating front three and a very solid midfield with those Scandinavian players, and just play football the way it should be played, pass and move the ball. And I think their next big star is probably Josh De Silva on the right, big, powerful right-sided midfield player who can also score goals like he did against Newcastle in the League Cup. I mean, yeah, it's got Ownwin written all over it. I think we need to play a 5-3-2 formation or 4-5-1. Perhaps a Wells on his own might even profit from that. But we're going to have to be aggressive. Everything we don't do, it's going to be a mountain to climb. Like I said, worry beads and prayer mat at the ready, because it's going to be difficult. But nobody's impossible to beat in this division. Teams that pass the ball do give you an opportunity to play, as we saw against Norwich. So there will be a chance. We've got to take the chances when they come. But we're going to have to defend like Trojans. It's going to be hard, but it might be a nice game of football to watch if you're a Brentford fan.
If you watch it on TV, Dave, Brentford are playing tonight at 5:30. Yeah, so we'll have had an extra 24 hours. So let's not have when we lose on Saturday, which I hope we don't. Obviously, want us to win every game, but is 24 hours, is that going to make a difference, do you think? Or are we going to have to be at our very best to contain them at the weekend?
I think whatever, we're going to have to play above how we've been playing for a long time now to get anything up there. And yeah, I don't think the 24 hours will make much difference, because they'll probably rotate a couple of players around and you know, and they'll come out looking quite fresh, I would have thought. So, yeah, I see a tough afternoon ahead of us, unfortunately.
Yeah, and would you change the formation to counter how they're going to play? Mark just alluded to 4-5-1. You know, with maybe Naki Wells up front by himself and give him a supply, you know, with maybe Semenyo coming in from the left. What would you see the chances of making any changes to the lineup with what we've got available?
Yeah, and I think that's the big problem. I think I go back to probably what I've said for a few weeks now, is that I with the players we've got, I can only see that we can really do and play the system that we drilled throughout pre-season, and that's 3-5-2. And actually, we've actually got enough centre-backs to play it, and we have done for quite a number of weeks. And I don't think the way we play 4-4-2 or the way we play 4-3-3, it isolates too many players, leaves big gaps. And I think we have to go back and try and become solid. And I think we also have to think about, is Saturday the game just to go a bit long ball and give them a bit of a battering? You know, if Pham can only play half an hour, well, can't he play 45 minutes? Can't we just give him a half and see how he is?
And maybe give him the first half rather than bring him on in the second, when we're behind and having to chase the game. Yeah? Would you do that?
I agree. I know he's been quite successful in terms of coming off the bench and getting goals, but I was thinking your best chance of winning a game is to win it by getting ahead. And we did that at Cardiff. And we showed, actually, if you've got something to hang on to, actually, sometimes it's easier to do that than to try and chase a game. But I think our best chance of doing that is to start Pham and get him to give Jansen and Pinnock a bit of a battering. Just say, go out there and just bang them about a bit. We're going to play long. We're going to play a bit direct. We're going to get it up to you. We're going to have midfield runners trying to get close to you to pick up any loose balls, but just go in there and be a bloody nuisance. I think Brentford are they're a bit more streetwise than we are, but they're not a side that likes getting it about either.
No, that's very true. I mean, Ian, I don't think Casey Palmer could come back into the reckoning, because when does a transfer window, or when can you recall players? Is it from the 1st of Jan?
Yeah. Yes, you can.
I don't think you get a registration in place, would we?
Well, I think if you recall,
if it was at all possible, would you be getting Casey Palmer back into a red shirt or purple shirt this Saturday if you could?
Yes, and Cameron Pring.
Yeah, they'd certainly be in my 20.
So that's what.
Yeah, I played Palmer, you've got to play him as a number 10.
He should be pulling out all the stops to do that.
Well, when I heard
we need the bodies.
When I heard a comment yesterday about we're going to look at who we recall and what we're doing after the Luton game, if we haven't got a strategy in place already as of 2 weeks ago, then we've really, really, really got it wrong.
Yeah,
and agree. There's no hope. You can see. I mean, from
Ian,
space.
Look, let's assume. Let's say. Let's hope we don't. We want to win on Saturday. We want to win on Saturday, but if we lose that, and let's assume that COVID isn't stopping postponements, because the number of postponements is getting very high. But let's assume the following week we go out of Portsmouth in the FA Cup. I mean, I said on OTIB, I said today's episode, are we at a crisis point? Will we be at a crisis point if we lost the next two games, or do you think it'll just bumble along? And should we be looking over our shoulders?
Should we be looking over our shoulders?
Towards
yes.
the top.
Oh, God.
Ian.
Should we be looking over our shoulders? Yes. Will we bumble along no matter what? Yes. Can I see it improving Only if we get a lot of the injured players back, and the first two we want are Mawson and Baker. But it's midfield where we're weak, and we've only really got Walsh to come back because Williams is out. So it needs something we don't do normally, which is some good signings in January. Doesn't matter if they're loan or whatever they are. We need to come up with some kind of a format and a plan. At the start of the season, we were going to play 3-5-2. Now, he played a system once where he had a number 11 and a number 8 in midfield, and it worked at Middlesbrough after we got battered, I'd say, for the first 20-25 minutes, but we managed to hold out, and then we played decent, and then he decided that was the way he was going to play forever. Then when Vyman and Patterson got injured, couldn't do it anymore. Now, if you're going to play Palmer, you play him as a 10, preferably behind two strikers, not one. On Saturday, if he was available, I'd start him in that role, in a kind of 3-4-1-2. Mm. And one of my two, I'd give Bell a debut, and I'd also give Taylor a debut. And if they're not doing it, then you can take them off. But we cannot go on saying to Tommy Rowe, right, you're a left back, you're a left wing back, you're a left centre back. We can't. But if you're going to put Tommy Rowe somewhere else, stick him in on the left side of a three in midfield, because at least he can tackle and shoot. Do something different.
Yeah. What do you think, Dave, to Ian? What do you think of Ian's suggestions, Dave? 3-4-1-2, assuming Palmer can come back.
Yeah, I kind of just call it 3-5-2, but you know, and you just have people doing slightly different roles in there. But yeah, I don't know how fit Palmer is, to be perfectly honest. I saw him a couple of weeks ago for Swansea, and I don't know whether it's their white kit, but he looked like he'd piled some pounds on, which was quite worrying. I don't know, but I don't disagree with what you're saying. It's definitely an option. I think you're right. I think if you want to play him, he'll work better with two guys up there. But it's about the team, isn't it? It's about how people feed the ball to him, and about how, you know, other people work different options and. I look at the game over the last, and it's quite a number of weeks now, and I don't see any structure to our play at all. It's all off the cuff stuff, and you know, that's quite a big worry, because I don't see where we can get a solid base from to actually play someone like a Palmer. Because what you want is you want good possession in the final 35-40 yards of the pitch, and then that's where you get him on the ball. But if you can't do that, then you're almost kind of wasting him, because I don't think he's not a hard worker. I just don't think he's a very efficient worker. He'll run stupid doggies to try and close people down. Won't get there, and then he'll be knackered out. So you want to use him effectively, and I don't see a system at the moment that enables a player to get the best out of him. But I think you've almost got to just take that risk and hope he flies.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah, no, I think somebody just put on Twitter that Naki Wells has gone 653 minutes without a league goal. 653 minutes for Wells without a league goal. That ain't very good, is it?
They're trying to cheer us up.
At all. In any... No, I don't know. I mean, look, it's one of the other threads on OTIP is enjoyment. And Dave, you've come back to what we said right at the beginning. You know, you haven't got, and you know, you're the, I'll say the most... You know, analytical of all of us on here, and you know, Ian, I place you two. I think Mark and I are probably similar. We enjoy the football or what have you, but we don't look at it as much in depth as you two guys, you Dave and you Ian. We don't look at it in quite the same level of depth. And would you agree with that, Mark? You know, I'm putting you down alongside me.
Not as friends.
Your views have become, you know, you've criticised, you've become more critical, and you've said it just now that, you know, there's something has got to change.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't got the confidence. You know, the players haven't got the confidence. How is it going to change? Yeah. So we were going to look back on the year. Let's forget 2020. But just to finish from each of you, Dave, what going forward from here, right? What needs to happen, which is might be different to what will happen, but what needs to happen that is achievable? You first, Dave, between now and the balance of the season, on the basis that we know players aren't going to be back till February, Williams isn't going to be back at all, Pham might go, he might not. What looks good for you in 2021 in terms of improving where we are now? Because we're on a road to nowhere right now.
Yeah, a couple of things for me. Single system, drill the players in every opportunity you've got on the training ground with them to make them better at it. Okay, and accept that against some teams, it ain't going to work. But learn from those games. And the next time you play a team like that, implement what you've learned from that. And actually, you can evaluate cause and effect better if you're doing the same thing over and over, or same system over and over. You know, you can understand that, yeah, perhaps let's just say it's 3-5-2. 3-5-2 doesn't work very well against a 4-3-3 team like Brentford. Okay, next time you play a 4-3-3 team like Brentford, say, I don't know, a Norwich or someone like that, put into practice what you learn. Do things differently within that, but within the same kind of overall framework. So that's kind of the first thing. And the second thing is, depending on, well, it doesn't matter what the budget is, bloody recruit well during the window. Get people in that are going to fit what you're going to do for the rest of the season with and if they're, you know, loans, then accept that they're there to do a short-term gap. If you actually buy anyone permanently, think about what the long-term is with them as well. And those are the two things. I think you can improve off that. Whether it's a big enough of improvement, I don't know. But it starts to set that identity crap word. Yeah, we know that. But I think you start to then realise what Bristol City are about as a team. And actually, you can then constantly evaluate it and evolve it. And maybe you get to next summer and think, right, I know exactly what I need now. We are missing a roving left wing back, for example. But unless you do that, you don't know. And at the moment, we've lurched from 3-5-2 to 4-3-3 to 4-2-1-3 to 4-4-2. And we are a bloody mess at the moment.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's a tombola formation, never mind team selection. It's all over the shop. Yeah? It's all over the shop. And if this bad run continues, because just to come back to you, Dave, on that, if the bad run continues, because I think after Pompey, you got Preston at home and Norwich away. Yeah? Do you think there could be any change? You know, I advocated bringing in a director of football on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, you know, an experienced hand above him. Yeah. Do you ever see anything like that happening? And I think he's subservient enough to accept.
Not if Mark Ashton's still at the club. I think
he's so, effectively director of football, isn't he?
Okay.
Yeah. Simple as that. I think it would blow the structure out.
Okay.
And just one final thing on that. Just reading OTIP this morning, and I think it was Kid in the Riot, who's normally pretty well informed, was talking about Paul Cook was interviewed, and there was a mutual disagreement that he fitted the club and the club fitted him. And I think that comes back to one person, and I think that's Mark Ashton. And I'm not saying he's at fault for everything that's going on the pitch, because that's completely wrong. But I do think that there's a common denominator in there with his role at the club hamstringing us in certain ways.
I mean, too much.
And recruitment is part of that. Yeah. Okay, Ian, your shout on that. Do you think? No, that's all insightful stuff, Ian. You know, what can we do, and what will we do, and not do? And I got to agree with Dave that Ashton is coming back to that common denominator. And do you think anybody is going to press any panic buttons if the bad run continues? Or do you think, you know, we've got it about us, that we've got a plan for the January transfer window?
okay, what do we need to do? First of all, we need to sort out the January transfer window, and we should have a strategy and players lined up now. Okay, if they're, I don't believe we're going to sit down and talk about it after Luton. They cannot be that naive and that far behind the curve. But please God, they're not. Secondly, the contractual situation needs to be resolved, and the fan base needs to be communicated with to explain what the long-term aim is, because I don't see the point in having signing players at a cost of $14 million and releasing them for nothing. We need to bring in the loan players, that they probably will be, unless we're going to sign some younger players. But they need to be younger players that can, that are first team players. We don't want any more at the moment ones for the future. We need some ones for now. We're still in a reasonable position.
Yeah.
So we need to get the contract sorted out. We need to get the injuries sorted out. And there's a massive question about why we've got all these injuries and why they are so bad. Because we're either not recovering the players, because every other club is playing the same number of fixtures and every other club has got issues with COVID. So it's not like COVID only exists in Bristol and City are the only side that didn't have a proper pre-season and all the rest of it. And other clubs haven't got as many problems, particularly the key players. Now, there, you talk about recruitment. There could be a story behind that in terms of, you know, how deeply do we look into the players' background, because we have signed injury-prone players, and Baker and Mawson being two. So that needs looking at. The contracts need looking at. And that strategic plan around January needs to be implemented this week. This week. I don't want anybody coming in, oh, we'll have this bloke halfway through January.
Yeah.
It is difficult, but we've had a long run into this. We know where we are with injuries. We know where we are with players. And as long as Steve Lansdowne is prepared to fund it, at the end of the day, everything financially comes down to him. If he's prepared to fund it, fine. If he's not, he needs to say so and play the kids.
Yeah. Ian, I think you're spot on with that. Is, you know, we don't know how much money's available. We need to do stuff early in the window, as you say. And if the money's not there, come out and tell us, because I think fans will accept that. You know,
well, same with the manager, Dave. I didn't have a problem with Dean Holden getting the job. Why I had a major problem, what I had a major problem with, was the process around it and the expectation level being raised with the Billy Big Shoes Talk Sport interview. Right?
Yeah.
That was my problem. They did exactly the same with Lee, and the sort of names that were being bandied about before Lee came in was Nigel Pearson, Brendan Rodgers even got a mention. And it was the same this time, or Steven Gerrard, Chris Hughton. All right, we might have dodged a bullet there, you don't know. But Paul Cook, experienced guys who had a track record. And then it's, well, we've interviewed all of them and we decided that Dean's going to get the job. Now, if they'd have come out as soon as Lee was sacked and say, right, we've got the COVID situation, you can't talk about a breath of fresh air and someone to take us to the next level, and then appoint the guy you sacked assistant. You can't do that. And that, I mean, when John Lansdowne was talking about the appointment, it didn't look like he believed what he was saying to me.
No,
John looked embarrassed by it.
No, that interview that he did in the stand after he'd been appointed was awful, awful, total. That was just a speech with lacked any conviction whatsoever.
It looked like he was. Right, it looked like he was reading somebody else's words. I've met John a few times. I like him. He knows far more about, you know, the tactics side of football than his dad. I'll tell you that now.
Thanks, Nora.
But John, you know, John will say, oh well, you know, he did well in that number 10 role, and you know, the wingers didn't get back. And John knows his football. So let's have that. You know, but I'm sorry, but I just don't. That recruitment process doesn't ring right. And like I said, I wish Dean Holden all the luck in the world. I hope we finish top of the table. But I need to see some planning, some strategy, something different happening that is going to take us to the next level, or will be a breath of fresh air, because what we're seeing now isn't what we were promised. It just isn't.
Right. Just on that, I think how it was communicated, I didn't worry that they took 6 weeks to land Dean Holden or whatever. I think what we wanted was a little bit more transparency from them, rather than he's a good human. We needed to understand more why they chose him, what the constraints were, because there's no way in the world that having interviewed Chris Hughton, probably at least had three chats with Chris Hughton, other people a couple of chats, some people just one chat before you filled out, that you've got Chris Hughton that far through the process for him not to be chosen as the better manager out of the two. And I think that's where it's fallen down, is that they've gone, maybe they haven't asked the right questions, and I think that's the flaw in the interview process. But you don't interview Chris Hughton three times in.
Well, that's it. I mean, it depends. How frustrating. It's interesting you make a point, Ian, about John being quite good tactically. How much of a stranglehold, and I'll put this one to Mark because you've been patient in the background, how much of a stranglehold has Ashton got on everything there now? Is John Lansdowne as frustrated as we are? That's the bottom line. But Steve, Uncle Steve, he's saying to his son, look, Mark knows best. Does Mark Ashton know best?
No, I don't think so at all. I think we completely messed up the Chris Hughton situation. I think Chris Hughton's suffering from all the players that Sabri Lamouchi brought in more than anything. They weren't his players, but anyway, that's all gone. But I think Chris Hughton didn't want to work under the structure, is my guess. Paul Cook, there was some disagreement there, and they took 6 weeks to find Dean Holden. Going back to answer your original question about what we do moving forward, I'd put those words from Gary Rabbit on the changing room wall, look at each and every player, look at them and say, you know, that Bristol City aren't a soft touch. Let's toughen up, play with some identity, 3-5-2 for the rest of the season, make other teams know that Bristol City are a tough team to play against. And that we're committed on the ball. We play bravely. When we play the ball into space, there's another player on ready to move into it. And we tackle back and we don't leave anything on the pitch in any of our games, because that will warm the fans' hearts. Let's do that for the rest of the season. Otherwise, we're going to really struggle. But let's be a brave Bristol City moving forward.
What you just said is very laudable and it's a great idea, but it's impossible. And
I've just asked what I want them to see, and that's all I can say, isn't it?
I want to start dating Carol Vorderman, but it's not going to happen, mate, because what you can't do, you can't go up to Adam Nash or Tyreek Backinson and say, right, lads, as of tomorrow, you're Kevin De Bruyne, right? And I want you... You know, Dave was talking about our lack of tackling in midfield, which is a basic of the game, right? There's nobody in there that I wouldn't fancy tackling now at my age. Never mind, they're not going to do it. You're not going to get, they're all going to get stuck in and they're going to be... They might be brave in the sense of trying to dribble past somebody. They might. But at the moment, the team looks frightened. And it looks as though their overwhelming desire is to pass the ball backwards or sideways, which is why I called it bore ball last night. It's just boring. Mm. And you're watching it and it just drives you mad. I mean, how many times did we pass the ball behind somebody? You count the times in the first half of a game that our players get a pass 10 yards and have to take it on the stretch.
Yeah. Wells is
checking his run on the other side. But I accept we're never going to be Manchester City. But I just want to see us a bit braver in our movement.
Got to be more
the way that we pass the ball.
They haven't got it in them. To for example, I'll give you an example. For our midfield, tracking runners, terrible. Now, that can be coached. But why hasn't it been coached? Why is Masengo regressed so much? Because he wasn't like that when he joined us. I'm just not seeing. No. If you look, saying how
guys.
Carry on.
I was going to say, we've got to continue. This is probably one of our longest ones that we've done, and anybody listening.
Well, we did have two games to get into one, David, didn't we?
We did have two games to get into one. Look, I think the conversation continues, as they say, I think, on Saturday after Brentford. Yeah, are we agreed?
That's going to be an R-rated program, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. I just want a performance. You know, if we went to Brentford, yeah, we lost 3-2, and we put right some of the things that we've been doing, but everything that you guys have said about lacking belief, lacking cohesion, plan, formations and everything, it all does come back to what's going on off the pitch with the coaches and the manager and what they're being told. And then, as I say, and it all happened because Ashton appointed Dean Holden. And I feel sorry for Dean because I think he was only given a 12-month rolling contract. And I'll pose this final question to all three of you, one-word answers, and then that will be the end of the pod for today. Right, in 1st of September, right, I'll come to Dave first. Mark Ashton, Dean Holden, yeah? Will they both be involved in Bristol City on the 1st of September next year? Yes or no?
Both of them, no.
Not saying which one's going to go, but will they both be involved with the club?
One of them, probably yes.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to ask you which one. Mark, same question to you. 1st of September next year, yeah? Both still there in their current jobs?
No. And I'm likening Mark Ashton to Thomas Cromwell. He found Anna Cleves and he had his head cut off for that, so because he pissed off Henry VIII. So, let's wait and see.
You don't think either. Okay, and finally, Ian, both 1st of September next year?
Barring relegation, yes.
Okay, guys and listeners, thanks to all those who've been putting in the old text messages. Bear Boy 79, you've been very active today, so thanks for that. We've had this is probably the longest pod that we've done since the demise of Little Lee. And talking about past managers, what about a comeback for Gary Johnson to get us out? You know, helping Uncle Steve, if we do start tumbling dangerously close to the bottom. And fair play to Steve Cottrell. What's that? Undefeated in 7 matches now, but he's only a League One manager, really. Guys, thanks for your contribution. Thanks to all the listeners. We'll be back on Saturday after the Brentford game. Thanks to you all. Cheers.
Can I just say one more thing?
Go on, one more thing.
Very briefly. I just want to say we've all had a terrible year, but let's think of the fans that we've lost to COVID. And one of my sister's best friends, a guy called Nigel Owen, died in April. And I'm sure that Ian and Dave and you, David, would have known people that have passed away. The same for other clubs. At the moment, we're in the middle of a pandemic. Let's look forward to a better new year. Football, elite football, could very well grind to a halt in the next few weeks. Let's hope the population gets better, and so do Bristol City in 2021. And that's what we all need. We all need a healthier future. So let's look forward to that.
Yeah, so all of us. All the best, boys. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Cheers, all.
Bye-bye. Thank you.